We are going to be able to complete chapter 2, and the book of Genesis. Now, last week I ran out of time. I figured I'd run out of time. Now, some of you were not here last Shabbat, and we went through a certain series of a name of what Joseph's name was. Can any of you remember? Not maybe not the name. Can you remember what it means? Okay, so good. That's good. Zaphanat, what's it? One is, first word is hidden, and the second word is reveal, in a sense. To sprout about, to talk about. So why would in your sense of thinking, why would Pharaoh name him that? What did Pharaoh do?
The hidden things of God were revealed through Yosef.
Right. And how do you know that? Because of the dreams.
The dream.
And so now he's given that title. Now, it's a very interesting title. From that point on, Joseph was known from that name to the Egyptians until he died. He wasn't known to Egyptians by the name of Joseph or Yosef. All he was known by that name. Now, in this dream, he had what, four different dreams, I guess it was? Oh, no, he was aware of... he had two dreams, and then the butcher, Butler had a dream, and the bread guy had a dream, and now Pharaoh had two dreams, and only one person can explain it all. Now, how does that reflect the Messiah?
Messiah was hidden to his brothers.
Okay. Messiah is hidden. Good. What else is known about the Messiah? The what?
Bringer of life.
A bringer of life. That's interesting. The bringer of life is from the Septuagint. Yeah, there you go. I try to remember that word right off the head. In Greek, it's very fascinating terminology. Why was he called the bringer of life in the Septuagint? He's the one that provided the grain. Right? So he brought forth. By the way, how many of you know the ancient English word for Lord? Do you know what it means? L-O-R-D.
Baal.
The what?
Baal.
Ancient English word for, what does the Lord mean?
Bread giver.
Bread giver. The lords are the ones, you have a sort of a landlord. Heard of them, right? They own the land. And you or by, we never owned it. And so you went to the landlord and worked for him, and he gave you the produce of the crop, portion of the crop, for you to make bread with or bring home with food. It's an ancient, we're talking not 1611 English, we're talking Shropshire English, way back there. That's where the word originally came from. And what we have in our modern terminology is, okay, don't lord it over anybody. You know, we mean it's a boss, a ruler, or some nasty guy. Well, actually in time, history, it didn't turn out that way, but this will let you know what that ancient word meant. It's very fascinating in English. Old English. Anyway, that's a sidelight. So here we have Pharaoh calling him something, and Joseph was able to reveal to him. But Joseph didn't just reveal something to him. He also revealed it to all of Pharaoh's, quote, cabinet members. His officers, the men who were in his chambers during this time. And then, of course, he's made him the boss of everybody. They made Joseph the boss of everybody. And then he went, remember his brothers? We're at this now. Let's say verse 8, that his brothers came because they needed food. And so they went to this one who reveals secret things, and he provided something for them. He provided food for them. Right? Remember that? We've gotten that far on that point. Remember, did he realize and understood one of his dreams? He says, oh, now I remember. Remember the stocks? They all bowed down to Joseph's stock. Not that they had no food to eat, and he had food for them to eat. Simple what that message is all about. And so they came and bowed their knee to him. And he, of course, we know the story here. They called them spies, and he had a tricked up the sleeve because he knew who they were, but they didn't know who he was. He wasn't, you know, a bearded guy. He was clean shaven. And at approximately 36, maybe 37, 38 years old by the time when they came, probably 37, approximately there. I'm not going to get Ted to go with that. And of course, they maneuvered them to get to go back home. They got a nutshell. Some of you know that. And so to get his brother back. He wanted to see Benjamin, of course. And so we're up now. Remember, Joseph was swearing by the life of Pharaoh because that's who he worked for. And it's a paralleling of what Yeshua himself, in a sense, swears by. He swears by his boss's name. What did he say? I can do nothing unless my boss tells me to do it. Remember that? And so you have the same parallel in a picture. We may think that's not a good thing to swear by Pharaoh, but it's a picture of the Messiah, in a sense, swearing or fulfilling the will of his father as Joseph was fulfilling the will of Pharaoh. And could Pharaoh be nice? Yes. But we don't have a nasty Pharaoh here, do we? We don't see a Pharaoh out there killing people, blaming people, attacking people. It's like he's over here in someplace else. He left complete authority unto one person. He says, whatever that man tells you to do, do it. He didn't even get into the discussion what to do, what not to do. He just, whatever that man tells you to do, do it. But it brings me to a point where the Messiah said at one time, I don't need a second witness. I don't need a second witness. Period. Well, pretty strong words. At this point in time, Pharaoh said to these people, whatever he says, do it. Now, all of a sudden, Pharaoh doesn't need to swear, if I can use that word, by Pharaoh. He could just institute the order. In a sense, that's what the same thing with the Messiah, right? When he was walking this earth as Yeshua, he told them, I don't need a witness. Period. They wanted two witnesses. Nah, you ain't gonna get one. I'm the only one that matters. Pretty strong words, don't you think? You ever met somebody that says, you take my word or not? Well, in the case of Yeshua, yeah, you better take his word or not. In the case of Joseph, you better take his word or not. Bad news if you don't take his word, right? Well, let's go on. Yes, you have a question.
If Yeshua can never break his own word, the Torah, and it requires two or three witnesses, how does that work out?
If he says his witness is whom?
The Father.
Yeah, and they don't know him.
So there is two witnesses.
He doesn't look at it from that point of view. You got to go back and read that part where he said that I don't have it written hidden here, but he says, I don't need a second witness at all. My word is good enough. That's all he said. I'm not going to go there because I can't remember where it's at, but it's in probably the book of John or Luke. I'm not quite sure. But it's a very strong statement from him. Now we're moving up where they came down a second time. No, the first time still? Or was it the second time? Okay. Still the first time. Okay. And we're into this where verse 19. And he says, if you, he's talking to his brothers, if you be true, let one of your brother be bound in the house. And in your prison, and go ye, carry the corn for the family in your house. Now, it's very fascinating. Now, remember, what's the main thing that what was the crop that Joseph had preserved? Was it oranges?
No.
Grape juice?
No.
Pomegranate. Pomegranate? Yeah, okay. Grain! Two most important grains are and were what? Barley and wheat. Now, that's not a mistake. Yes. Well, there was a government in control of it. Yes, however. Never got a G there in this case. All right. And so now we're at verse 41 there. And remember, they're talking to one another. And it says, we are very guilty concerning our brother. See, they start talking back and forth. Guilty? In that we saw something. It's very important, this terminology here. The anguish of his soul when he besought us and we would not listen. And you know the story, threw him in a pit, right? And of course he was later pulled out by not them, by Goyim, end of quote, pulled out of the bottomless pit. And lo and behold, he was sold. You know, we know that story, to one of Pharaoh's number one, I'll call him henchman, the one who helped run part of his army. And then, of course, we know the story about him and this man's wife. And so he threw him in prison. He didn't have authority to kill him, but he had authority to throw him in prison. And we know about the butler, and we know about the baker, and so on and so forth. But we're at this particular point in time, and it's almost like saying, okay, it's a payback time. Now, here, Joseph is completely in control. Either he provides food for them, or he doesn't provide food for them. Whose decision is it, Pharaoh's? No, it's Joseph. And now he sees his brothers in anguish, in trouble. And of course, Reuben said something, verse 22. Now this is where we get technical on a lot of things, right? But remember, four of the brothers, where were they when Joseph was thrown in the pit?
Hebron.
Where were the other brothers? They were supposed to be in Shechem, but they traveled farther north between the two mountains. You remember that? Now, Benjamin wasn't there. He was back home with Dad. So we have the sons of Leah in control of where Joseph was told to go and find out how the crop or the flock is doing under the care of the other brothers. So we know now, we're narrowing it down. Now, remember, Reuben did not know what happened to Joseph. He went back. He talked the men not to kill him, remember? Okay, so they put him into, it was a pit, but it's a water, pit means the well that went dry and is very deep. Basically, that's all that word means. And so they threw him in there, and Reuben's going to go back and take him out and head back home without the rest of his brothers. And guess what? He wasn't there. And he said he is afraid to face his father. Awesome respect to his father, but he's afraid to face his father and say, I don't know where Joseph was at. And so there was a little maneuvering going on from some of the brothers. Be careful what I'm saying here now. who kind of knew what was going on. They, you know, which one said, well, why don't we just sell him instead of killing him? It was Judah, right? And so, oh, cool, let's do it. So they had him sold. So no, Judah was one of them. And then a little maneuver happened, and they had to kill a goat or a lamb or kill something, and took Reuben, Joseph's coat and put blood all over it. Of course, the obvious was to present evidence that he was killed by a wild animal. Right? Remember that? A wild animal. And they found his body, you know, they found the coat, but they didn't want to bring back the body because it was just too mangled. Anyway, another story. So how now? Reuben is saying something in chapter 42, verse 22. And Reuben answered them, the rest of his brothers, saying, speak not I unto you, saying, do not sin against the child. So Reuben was not a bad kid, a bad man. A lot of people have an opinion about him. That's required. This isn't important. What's important is right here, right now. He talked them out of killing him. Literally killing him. And he would not hear. Therefore, behold, he said something very strange. He didn't say his captivity and slavery or disappearances on our head. He said his blood. We are responsible for his death. Because Jacob was never told the truth of what took place. Reuben didn't tell his father what really took place. Judah didn't tell their father what really took place. Neither did Levin, and neither Shimon or Simeon. They made sure Dad didn't know the truth. They wanted Dad to believe a lie, and guess what? That's what he did. Now, Reuben, remember he went back to free him, right? And he was gone. And you could say what you want to say, but it looks very carefully because here, someone understood who they were talking about. Who overheard the conversation? Joseph! They're speaking in Hebrew, or that language at that point in time. And, of course, Joseph was speaking Egyptian. And always had an interpreter. Back and forth. Talk about someone really hiding himself. Who knows exactly what's going on? He really concealed who he really was at this particular point in time. And later on he reveals or unloosens them and lets them know who he is. And great joy took place. But that's beside the point. We know that took place. So we're here in the particular chapter now. And so he made a deal. He went in there and he took used instead of interpret, and then verse 42, and he turned himself about from them and he cried. Now a lot of people may think, well, he was crying because he's repenting. No, I don't think so. What do you think? Why did he cry for? Somebody what? Somebody cared. Reuben cared about it, so and all of a sudden, okay, Reuben's not the bad guy either, is he? He wasn't one of the bad ones. What else? Why else do you think he cried?
Well, Joseph was head and shoulders above his brother spiritually at the time. And he knew that even though they meant evil, the Holy One meant it for good. He was able to comprehend that way before his brothers knew who he was. So for him, he cried because he saw some compatibility with his brothers and their... He also knew he was going to have them back in his life.
Okay. Anybody else has any reason why he might have cried?
I don't know how he felt about them loving him, but Joseph's first kid was named. I want to forget it because it was too painful. He still loved them.
Yeah. We talked about those two kids' names, right? They had the meaning of the Messiah, not anything else. Not anything else. They have more meaning about the Messiah than anybody else.
I would say he had intense mixed emotions. This man was deeply aware of all the circumstances and the heartbreak and the, you know, he was embracing the thoughts of his father, his younger brother, everything. I mean, it was like, who wouldn't be like weeping and, you know, seeing the whole, say, end of the story or the end of that old story and where things were going to go. I mean, he just had a revelation and deeply, deeply mixed emotions.
Good. I get some response here. That's great. Yes.
Vindication. Vindication. Okay. You're this person and you've done absolutely nothing to deserve these people's hatred. And then they, you know, they take you away from your family, from your home, and they sell you into slavery, and, you know, and you try to keep a good attitude because you believe in God and you want to do, you know, your best for Him. But the whole entire time, you know, your whole entire life, even after you've risen to greatness, it all started from your family disowning you and treating you like garbage.
Remember, his brother spoke always unkind to him, was not nice to him at all.
So for, you know, I mean, I think for me in my position, because I haven't dealt with something that intense.
At least the sons of Leah were not friendly.
Right.
The other ones don't seem to have an issue one way or the other.
But I just think that even in the small ways in my life that I've, you know, been tossed out by my family, I think that I look forward to the day that God has revealed to them not so much their wrongdoing, but just, I guess, their responsibility for their part of it. Because to me, that means resolution and restoration of them as well as me. So that's where I go with it.
He may have remembered the dreams he had about how his brothers were going to bow down to him.
Okay.
I grew up in a large family. Stop and think about, I believe the father started this orchestration when Jacob chose to love Joseph over his brothers. He treated him with a multicolored coat. So I grew up in a family where there was special interest, and it wasn't me. Trust me, if you're humanistic, you can hate a sibling easily. So for these 11 dudes, plus maybe the sisters, I could see where they could have a real negative attitude towards them from the very beginning.
Why did Joseph... Okay, you got another statement? But Brian?
The truth sets people free, and there was a lot of truth happening.
Yet to be revealed. All right. Yet to be revealed. Now, I want to make one more comment. Do you remember why Jacob liked Joseph over the rest? Why? Okay. What is it that all the other brothers did not receive from God, but Joseph received from God? The very same thing that Jacob received from God. Dreams. Dreams from the Creator.
He was also called by...
Well, it's the plan of God. No, I'm not disagreeing with you on any of that. Yes.
But the thing, though, is that the Bible says that God favored Joseph even before Joseph had dreams.
Oh, that sounds like Esau and Jacob right before they were born. Oh, you mean God's in control of this whole thing? People are not involved? Well, they're involved, but God is the final say-so in everybody's life, including what we're seeing here. Now, Joseph cried. Now, I have my own thinking about it, right? It relates to somebody else that cried in the New Testament. And he wept because of what? Someone was dead. And what took place? He raised him up from the dead. And he cried. Before he raised him up, he cried. Now, before Joseph could deliver these people out of their calamity, what did Joseph do? Cry. His heart went out toward, in a sense, his condemned brothers. His condemned brothers. They knew they were in judgment of God because they said, the blood is on our hands. Who can relieve us from this blood that's on our hands? Do you get the picture? Do you understand that? Here's a direct relationship to the Messiah. How does God relieve the blood that's on your hands? You can't. But he can. Yes, technically speaking, they didn't kill him. But the hatred was so great. You remember what the Messiah said? If you hate somebody, you're guilty of killing them. It's considered murder. Same story, right? It happened to Joseph. It happens, and we see it here. It happened to the Messiah himself. He was hated without a cause. Quote, without a cause. That's not really there in the little writing, but I'll get through this thing. Let's go down to last part of verse 24. After he had wept and got quote control of himself, in a quote, then he took one of them. Why would you think he'd take Simeon for? Because Simeon was part of this, of the whatever it was, of maneuvering, throwing him in the pit, selling him, whatever it was. Reuben wasn't part of it. So we know Simeon was part of it. Now that leaves us with Judah, because he was part of it. Now leaves us one of the Levi. Okay. Those three guys left. Simeon? Why did he bound him? Why did he bound Simeon? Because Joseph was bound. Who do you think bound Joseph? Reuben? Simeon. All right. So, turn around, fair play. Now, what you sow, you will reap. In a sense, all right. I found that very fascinating relationship, bound. Well, that's fascinating. Interesting terminology between the two. And he kept Simeon. And to make a long story short, Joseph went and he filled the bags up with corn, verse 25, and restored every man his money to his own pack. Didn't even ask Pharaoh. Didn't have to. And provided them food on their way and even for their animals. So he heard them talking, explaining, did a few words, and how they did not know. Only a few of them knew he was sold as a slave. It would either be Simeon, we know Judah was there, and perhaps Levi. We don't know, right? So we're down to three guys. You understand so far the story? Been with me so far? Okay. Of course, they went back home to their mother, back home. And they opened up their bag and they stopped at a place to sleep. And they opened up at the inn they were at, and lo and behold, what'd they find? Well, they opened up a certain sack. What sack did they open up? Listen carefully what the word did. I find it very, very fascinating. He didn't put the money in the sack for the family to eat. He put the money in the sack for them to open up to feed their animals. Different kind of food. Different kind. Wasn't the same. That's what it says, right? He opened the sack to feed his donkey provisions at the inn. And there, money. And so, behold, the rest of them opened up and to feed their donkey, and lo and behold, there was money there. And they were happy, right? What's the story behind the story of the donkey? Daniel explained that to you, right? No, Dan, Jeff played that too. Donkey, what is a donkey? It carries something, right? It carries the burden. The donkey always carries the burden. In this case, the donkey carried money, the blessing, back to the family. A donkey was carrying them. Now, that's fascinating, don't you think? As well as a curse. All right? Very fascinating. Just a coincidence, of course, right? It just happenstance. God had no idea they were going to do this. Joseph, nobody had, they just did it, right? Yeah. Donkey. Fascinating. Now, he says now, verse 28, and he said to his brethren, my money is restored. And lo, even in my sack, and their heart failed and were afraid, saying, what is it that Joseph has done to us? Oh, Elohim has done to us. Because remember, the blood is on us. His death is on us. We're responsible for his death. Now, at least we know two of them knew he wasn't dead. Simeon and Judah. I'm not quite sure about Levi yet, but don't worry about it. Does not matter. As we continue on here, I said later on, every man abundantly found that he had his money. And anyway, it says, went to his father, and his father says, verse 30, this man, the Lord of the land, I talked about this before. Very seldom does a scripture come out and just use the phrase, the man. They just say, a person, a male. They have that the man in front of it. How many of them, biblically, in the Torah, are called the man? Joseph was one of them. Moses was the second one. There's a picture here, right? This means that the man has a final say-so. This man makes the final decisions. There's one other one I think is Abraham. I'm not quite sure. I may be wrong on that one. But he says, this man spoke roughly to us. That word roughly, by the way, I don't know if I told you, but it meant he was downright nasty. He was downright raised voice, anger, furious, and accusations beyond accusations toward them. And it was not a kind person. He was brutal with his language. Not filthy language, brutal with his language. After all, he's the man. That either lets him live or die, go to jail or not, get your food or not. He was the man. As they called him, the man. And so he told him, we are true. We're honest, we're upright, we're decent. We're honest and true men of one man. And of course, one of them was not. He says, we told him who they were. And the youngest one was back home. And lo and behold, we know the detail, because he was not going to release Simeon until he saw the youngest son. And then he knew that, quote, they were not liars. They were true men. In verse 30, and the man, the Lord of the country, said to us, hereby shall I know that ye are true. Interesting word to use. Leave one of your brethren with me. Well, he didn't leave him. He just took him. He bound him. Put him in prison. Can't get out. And so they're going in here. In verse 37, I want to drop down there. And it says here, Reuben spoke to his father, saying, slay my two sons if I bring not him back, that is Simeon back, deliver him unto my hand and will bring him in to thee again. That's a pretty powerful statement. You could kill your two grandkids if I don't bring back Simeon. Did he go along with it? No, he didn't go along with it at all. Yes.
Is that sort of saying the same as on the life of my children? You know how it says, on the life of Pharaoh, I do this.
You could put it that way. I never thought about it that way, but that's a way. Swear by the life of Pharaoh, swear by the life of my kids. Well, that's kind of heavy, but I understand what you're saying. But talking Reuben is saying this. Now, why would Reuben do this? It's an odd statement, don't you think? Kill my two sons. Why would you want to kill them for? Yes.
I think it's there for us to see where Reuben was with the whole thing and where Judah was with the whole thing. They grieved. They realized what they had done.
Reuben took upon himself a very serious judgment. Yes.
Although, on the other hand, if you think of it this way, they're starving, they're going through famine, and so on and so forth. If Reuben and the other brothers are not successful in getting more grain from Egypt, they're all going to starve to death anyway. So,
we'll talk about that.
That probably might be one reason why maybe this promise didn't give Jacob much comfort, is because, well, we're all going to die anyway if you guys aren't successful, so killing my own grandchildren, you know, is not going to give me any comfort. It's not going to help the situation whatsoever.
The next chapter I will not get into. All right? That's a very important next chapter. I'm sorry, we won't go there today. More than likely, we'll not go there until after the feast. Because tomorrow is the beginning of the great ingathering. And Apostle Paul says, in season, speak in season. So for the next 21 days, we're going to be talking about the season that we're supposed to speak in. So you're not going to find out what I'm thinking about or what I found out about in the Hebrew, the fascinating things that are written there in the 43rd chapter. Until after, okay? Sorry about that, but that's the rules of the Apostle Paul. I'm not going to go against him. Anyway, he said now, yes.
I'll wait until you're finished. I wanted to read three verses that pertains to my brother over there when he spoke about the witness.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Thank you. John 8, verse 12, we break into the middle of a discourse between the Pharisees. Anyway, and again, therefore, Yeshua spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. The Pharisees therefore said to him, you are bearing witness of yourself. Therefore, your witness is not valid, is what it means. Here's the answer, because there are witnesses that just aren't on earth. It says, Yeshua answered, said that even if I bear witness of myself, my witness is true, for I know where I came from. Where did he come from? And where I'm going. Right. But you do not know where I came from or where I'm going. You judge according to flesh, I do not.
Yeah, see, so the Torah talks about two witnesses. They talk about two human witnesses or some two pieces of evidence on this earth. Now, thank you for going there because I knew it was something in that phrase. That can't. How often do people talk to the Father to find out, by the way, is this guy the real guy? He's not going to answer you, by the way. He hasn't answered nobody. Yes, Jeff.
Issue of the more than one witness is connected to that phrase that we've been talking about, you know, as Pharaoh lives and it's such like that. Because why do you swear by something like that? You swear by something greater than yourself, and especially you're swearing by something that is you consider immovable. And in Egypt, the Pharaoh was considered like a deity, so you're swearing by something divine. To swear by God and his throne, you're supposedly swearing by something that is immovable, something beyond yourself. And with the witnesses, if you just say something, okay, that's just you flapping your gums. If someone else says something, now you're you've got some authority beyond yourself. Now, if you've got also that other witness is something from what God is saying, then that's beyond yourself as well.
Right.
But what do both of those things have in common? The swearing by something greater than yourself, by so-and-so lives as God lives. Well, God is eternal, so that is okay. Something that's always going to be there. And your witness, then, is the one who's always going to be there. However, everything, then, if you're swearing by the Creator, comes from the Creator. So who does the Creator need to swear by? No one.
Yeah.
Unless,
of course, you remember the Sanhedrin. That's the highest authority. All right? That's who you quote. Remember, he said, you don't know God. You don't know my Father. All you guys do is glorify yourself one to another. So they swear by themselves. They didn't swear by God. So their witnesses had to be witness of, oh, what Pharisee said this? What rabbi said this? What teacher said this? Who said that? Then they believe it. It's that way to this day. By the way, a lot of Christians have the very same approach. Some main preacher, oh, you know what somebody said? I don't care whether this right-wing Christian, left-wing Christian, middle road Christian. I don't care whether it's a messianic Christian, messianic, non-messianic Christian. I don't care. I don't care if it's one who keeps Sabbath. I don't care if one who keeps the holy days. If you swear by him or think he's greater than anybody else, you got a problem. I have a problem. I'm not going to talk with you. Yes.
Verse 12 talks about Yeshua said he was the light of the world.
Yeah.
Think about the light spectrum. How many colors are there in the light spectrum?
All.
Yeah, well, at least seven, which is...
Yeah.
Eight? Okay. Anyway, the bottom line, no matter how you look at it, there's multiple witnesses just in light alone.
With all the, okay.
You know, just
we got there.
Amazing.
I want to get here. We're finished here now. I have to make a statement here about Reuben. Reuben spoke to his father, saying, slay my two sons. Now, in our thinking, that's the stupidest statement you ever can say to your father. I want you to kill my two kids if I don't bring back Benjamin. And you say, man, where was his thought? What was he talking about? What is it that Reuben, inside of his internalmost part, felt? He was guilty. He said, its blood is on us. Atonement has to be made for the blood. Pretty heavy, isn't it? All right. Now, an all true quote, probably Reuben says, take my life, but he didn't. He uses something very, very close to him. His sons. Does that sound familiar where somebody had to give the life of his son that's very, very close to him? Huh? And Abraham. These guys knew their grandfather, by the way. They actually knew who the grandfather was. Grandfather. Remember, when Abraham died, Joseph and, Joseph was, they would not have known their grandfather because he was already dead. But Joseph was about the age of 17 when Abraham died. Not Joseph, I mean, Jacob, 17 years old when and his grandfather died. And 17 years, by the way, is very fascinating. It's paralleling another man's life of 17 years. And we'll go there right now. So Reuben takes on his full responsibility. Yes, he could have said, just kill me. But that isn't the issue. The issue is, I'm responsible, Dad, for killing your son, whom you loved. I'm responsible. It's easy just to take Reuben's life. But the sorrow was so heavy that Jacob could never forget it. Now Reuben understood that sorrow. If Reuben's life was taken, his sorrow would be gone. If Reuben's sons were taken, Reuben's life would be in sorrow. Do you understand what he was thinking? It's odd thinking to our 21st century, but it's not odd when you start thinking that he, Reuben, really admired and respected his dad. We think bad things about Reuben. Why? Here's the man who said, "Dad, I know I'm responsible for killing your son. Payback time, Dad. If I don't bring back Benjamin, kill my sons. I'll know. For both of your sons will be dead. So take both of mine. And I will live a life of sorrow as you have lived." That's repentance. Do you ever see that? Know that? Look at it. He's really repenting to his dad. If he cannot bring back Benjamin and Benjamin gets killed, man, Dad, take my kid's life and I'll live in sorrow as long as I live. Isn't that pretty heavy? Did you ever look at it from that point of view? Did you ever picture the mere fact that this man understood the sorrow of his dad and he was responsible for it? Pretty heavy stuff, don't you think?